All right, everybody, it's time for another Jay Flemma Sports Report. I am Jay Flemma, and you are listening to the Golf News Net on iHeartRadio. Well, as everybody knows, it is also ski season as well as golf season, at least in the South, it's golf season. But those of us up north have had a lot of snow to deal with. Hooray! There are some of us that still worship Uller, and I know a lot of you listeners and readers do too. And so we're going to skip the golf for the moment. We'll talk a little more about that in segments 3 and 4. But I want to bring on a new guest who I hope is going to become a regular. I got a fellow for you folks that has traveled extensively throughout the world. If I count correctly, I think he's skied on 4 different continents. But I might be wrong. It might even be more. He runs a website called Peak Rankings. You're going to love this guy. He actually is king of the skiing world while living in, wait for it, New York City. So please give a warm Jay Flemma Sports Report welcome to Sam Weintraub.
Thank you for that intro, Jay.
So everyone has to figure this one out for openers, though. Tell us how you manage to travel the skiing world while living in New York City.
Oh, that is such a great question. I think let me ask you this, Jay. If you lived in a place like Colorado or Utah, would you want to actually go to other places around the world?
Yes, I have wanderlust, though. But that's just me. And I think a lot of my readers do too, and a lot of our listeners. You'll find that they travel all over to play golf. Some of our listeners have memberships at upwards of as many as 5 different country clubs, for example. And some of them like to collect, like writers collect datelines, they collect their places that they've traveled all around to. So I think you're going to have a lot of interest from our listeners because they may have been to where you've been. But anyway, yeah, tell us, okay? Since you live in New York, you must have wanderlust.
I mean, I think there's some element of wanderlust to this, but the more impactful thing to me, and this might sound crazy, but skiing is great and all, but being my own boss and not working a 9-to-5 job is, I think, the best part about running Peak Rankings. And, like the fact that there's all these places to go and ski, it's an absolutely incredible part of this job. But one of the other things that I've realized is if I want this business to be a sustainable thing full time, I need to take it seriously from the business standpoint. And that means I can't be playing 100% of the time. And I do need to be working to make sure, like while I do get to ski quite a bit, the financials of the business actually make sense. And I think having a more grounded and I guess down to earth home base that doesn't necessarily revolve around tempting me to go skiing all the time is that necessary middle ground that I found. So I have actually lived in the mountains before, but I think I realized that in terms of, stepping out of the skier role and more into the running a business role, I had to separate myself from that a little bit more than, I would have if I could have just done an 100% leisure type of life.
And New York is the business hub of America, if not the entire world, too. So it's as good a place to hang your hat as any. Plus, it's got some of the best airports in the entire world to get you wherever you need to go without having to take a connecting flight. I'm sure that comes in handy as well. So, how many continents have you skied on?
So I think I've actually only done three.
North America, South
North
America,
America,
and
South
Europe.
America, and Europe. Yep.
Now, when will the Japan trip be?
2026. We actually already have dates. We just have not publicly announced them yet.
Now, tell us more about peak rankings and, in particular, how your rating system works.
Sure. So Peak Rankings is intended to just, number one, provide a comprehensive score based off of the things that the typical person would care about. But for, everyone has their own criteria. And that's why, you know, when we're ranking these resorts, we don't just give a rank order of which mountain is best. We will give certain criteria to demonstrate, you know, like what specific factors went into each overall score. And the reason why we do this is because, you know, the overall rankings, those are intended to maybe just provide a high-level overview for someone who doesn't know that much about what they want in a ski vacation. But if you do know what you want, if you value snow quality, or if you value a really good-looking mountain, we provide individual scores for each of those categories. So you can kind of pick the parts of the score that you care about most, and you can use that to kind of customize your own rankings. So the way that the rankings kind of work, just to summarize it, is they are supposed to be a high-level, easily digestible tool for someone who's, you know, not that familiar with the resort space, but they're also designed to kind of like low-key give a pretty in-depth analysis of what a resort's going to be like for those who are more in the know about what they want from their vacation.
Okay, so give us a list of the particular categories that each one of your resorts is ranked under. Everything
Sure.
from, yeah.
So there are 10 categories for each mountain. They involve snow, so that's snow quality. There's resiliency, so that's, you know, like how well the resort stacks up when it comes to, you know, bad weather conditions. Can it withstand, you know, like keeping its trails open in the event something goes wrong? The overall size, which we measure independently, so we don't look at the resort's acreage claim. We genuinely use our own acreage calculator to see how big a resort is. Terrain diversity, which is based off of, you know, the uniqueness of the terrain that's at a resort. And then we have a special category for challenge, because resorts that have more difficult terrain are often harder to come by, and it's something that's a little bit more, you know, reserved for more exclusive resorts. Then we have lifts. So this is how modern the lifts are. We have crowd flow. So this is how well the resorts handle the crowds that they get. So it's not necessarily how crowded they are, it is how well that they mitigate crowds.
Sure,
So
everything from how many people they can move up the mountain to how quickly they'll move people in between various chairlifts. Either, say, for
sure.
example, at Mount Snow, you've got the redundancy factor, while at, say, Stratton, you've got so many different areas of the mountain that are interconnected that you're not going to get the traffic jam.
So yeah,
Different
I
ways
think
of
Mount
handling that.
Snow, so Stratton has a lot of redundancies, which help with the crowds that it gets. Stowe has a good amount of crowds, not as many as Stratton, but it has fewer redundancies, so that hurts Stowe. Mount Snow has a good amount of redundancies, but it has a really, really large number of crowds. So, you know, like the redundancies help a little bit, but it's more crowded than Stratton at this point, at least from the experiences that me and my team have had over the last couple of years. So it still scores lower than Stratton would.
But I
But
interrupted you. Do you have any other categories that I
yes.
and those
So
are?
there are three more. So there's on-mountain facilities. So, you know, when you're on a ski vacation, you're either going to get tired, or you're gonna go in for a break because of the cold if you are an average skier. Now, I know a lot of the people who I talked to, probably you included, you're probably okay with just eating a sandwich or granola bar on the slopes. But for the average person, it is important to have a place you can stop in that is comfortable and has enough capacity to sit down. So that's something that we look for as well. Then we have ease of navigation. So how complicated is the resort to get around? How's their signs? How likely are you to get lost or end up at the wrong base area at the end of the day? Then finally, we have mountain aesthetic, and that's really just how unique the mountain looks. So this is basically the category of, are you going to a place that's going to blow your mind away? So, you know, like a place like Heavenly, for example, you're literally overlooking a lake that is deep blue and never freezes. It feels like you're on another planet. So that's a place you might go just as a tourist site. Lake Louise, that's another example. Whereas, you know, if you go to a place like Camelback, which we actually haven't put up a review of yet because we haven't actually been to other resorts in that specific area, but With Camelback, you literally are riding up the chairlift along water slides that are out of use for the winter. That's disgusting. So
Kind of like the food at up, name redacted, but go
but anyway, those are the 10 categories. And then we also provide criteria on things like, you know, how long it takes to get there from the nearest major cities, what passes the resort is on, how much the average lift ticket costs. And we do our own analysis on lift ticket prices, so we know what a lift ticket is going to cost for any day of the season. That's not as useful anymore with Epic and Icon passes comprising like the bulk of visits now, but it was historically really useful when it came to helping people figure out how much their passes would cost. And then we also assess, kind of as a satellite score, the lodging and the opry ski experiences. We don't include those as part of the overall score of the mountain because we're specifically trying to encompass the mountain experience, and those things don't happen on the mountain, but we know they're important when you're planning your vacation, so we want to provide that information as well. And if you're looking at a resort and those specific criteria matter to you, you can filter based off of, you know, like whether a resort has on-site lodging or whether it has a good opry ski town and things like that.
So your system and my system are markedly close. I think mine's a little more primitive than yours. You've got things fine-tuned a little bit more. And everybody, I think you should go check out peakrankings.com and especially check out the YouTube channel for Peak Rankings. It's an indispensable bit of research, to get you started in the right direction. Now, the differences between your system and my system, I don't know if you do this, but I give difficulty double. I count that category twice. And I think your thinking and my thinking are in the same vein, which is a place that can challenge the very best has to have a bit of an edge over a place that doesn't. Not so much that it can host the Olympics, but has it got that extra level that, as they said in the movie Spinal Tap, these go to 11. Okay, that extra boost, that extra bit of stoke, just there's something special about it that takes it from a mere destination resort to someplace that the cognoscenti speak of in holy whispers. And that can be anywhere from a gigantic resort to, maybe even a mid-sized place that's got some really terrific runs. And so we're going to get deep into that, everybody. In particular, Sam and I are going to be discussing New Hampshire and Vermont because that is where I believe the two of us have skied the most, although we may also talk a little bit about South America in the second half of Sam's part of the show. But all right, so in general, what are your thoughts generally on vacationing in Vermont versus vacationing in New Hampshire for skiing and snowboarding?
Yeah. Well, I actually wrote and put together a video on this a couple of months ago, but in most cases, I would recommend that people go to Vermont over New Hampshire. There are three main reasons for this. Reason number one is that Vermont is closer to most major population areas than New Hampshire. If you're skiing in the east, you're probably driving, and unless you live in Boston or maybe parts of Montreal, it's going to be a lot faster for you to get to a resort in Vermont than one in New Hampshire. The second thing is the issue of snow. So, Vermont, their resorts get more snow than the New Hampshire ones. That's obviously not going to always be the case, but in general, Vermont just is more snowshoe than New Hampshire. The third is Vermont is a it just has bigger resorts than New Hampshire. There are a variety of reasons why Vermont's resorts are bigger, but New Hampshire, I think, actually has cooler mountains in general than Vermont, but a lot of them are protected wildlife, or they're just so crazy that it's impossible to develop ski resorts on them. So we end up in a world where most of the ski resorts that you've heard of in Vermont are bigger than the largest ski resort in New Hampshire. So let me name off a couple. Stowe, Sugarbush, Killington, Okemo, Mount Snow, Stratton, all of them are bigger than every single ski resort in New Hampshire. That is not to say that New Hampshire doesn't have its strengths. There are a couple of resorts there that are notably challenging. Cannon, I think, comes to mind first, and then Wildcat, that's another one. New Hampshire also has some incredible views for ski resorts in the east, especially Wildcat again. But I might argue that some people might even find Cannon to be more beautiful than Wildcat. I think Wildcat's got like that really unique view of Mount Washington, but you're looking at that the whole time, whereas Cannon, I think, has a little bit more diverse of views. And then I think there's also the fact that some of these New Hampshire resorts are, if you haven't bought a pass, they're on the cheaper side for what you get than Vermont. Although this isn't always the case, and places like Jay Peak are pretty cheap in Vermont as well. But anyway, that's kind of my general thoughts of what it's like to ski in Vermont versus New Hampshire. If you don't live in Boston, it is going to be very rare that I will recommend that you go all the way out of your way to ski New Hampshire if you can just do Vermont instead. And I guess actually I didn't mention this, but the fourth point is New Hampshire ski resorts aren't really actually all that much less crowded than Vermont ski resorts because of that proximity to Boston. So you're not really getting any crowd benefits by going an hour or two out of your way either.
Here's my thoughts. I've been to now, I would say, 16 total places, eight on each side of the border. I haven't seen everything that I've wanted to see, only a few stragglers aside. My thoughts are this, that the category that Vermont wins out for the most for me is gnar. I don't think there's any question that pound for pound, through the bag, as we say in golf, that Vermont's got tougher challenge than New Hampshire. I give New Hampshire thus far big props in ergonomics. It's easier driving around in New Hampshire. I find that the amenities are generally a little less expensive and a little more dialed up than in Vermont, a few stragglers aside. For example, if you go to Jay Peak, you can have a wonderful time at the Phineas Swan if you want to drop $355 a night. However, if you've got a buddy, I do recommend it. They've got three hot tubs, one in your room and two on the outside. And the bathrobes, oh my God, these big, it's like a sleeping bag, the thing. But getting back to brass tacks, at the moment, overall, I'm giving the edge overall to New Hampshire, but it's a very close call, and there are some big names coming up in Vermont. So let's talk in a little bit more detail about a couple of the places that you brought up, including one of my absolute favorites that I believe is an imperative that you wouldn't ordinarily do this, but I think it's important that I recommend to all of my readers, and that you might want to recommend to all of your listeners and readers. Canon, its history and its ethos, and the fact that the New Hampshireites are so receptive that you become, an honorary New Hampshireite when you get there. Do you feel that everybody should at some point drop what they're doing and go up and ski Canon? It's too important to miss.
If the conditions line up.
But isn't bad conditions part of the challenge of Canon?
I mean, I gotta give it to you, man. I think you have a bigger than average appetite for bad vacation experiences. When I
I've
went
agreed with
to
you this
Cannon,
time.
the whole thing was an ice sheet. Now, this is my job, so I'm more than happy to ski down and like get footage of terrain that is actively destroying the cartilage in my knees. But I have to be honest about the types of people who I'm giving this advice to, and for people who like the my clientele is the average person who is using their ski vacation as an opportunity to like take their hard-earned savings and use that money on something that will actually get them a good experience. So like the way I look at it is, if you or me, both of us are in the industry, so I would not go by my rankings in a lot of circumstances for people who are under that unique circumstance and able to ski 100 times a year. But like my rankings, I would say, are more for people who have a week to ski each year, or maybe even a couple days. And what I'm trying to do, and I think what the team is trying to do, because it's not just me anymore, is provide a guide, a consumer guide that helps people who this might be like a year or two's worth of savings for this trip. I think the most tragic thing is if someone goes on a vacation and they end up like really disappointed because the experience sucked.
Oh, the most tragic would be that they go and they get hurt. Has happened to
Yeah,
my
that
friend
would definitely be
at
terrible. If you get
Powers.
hurt, that's probably not going to be a good time.
Well, let me ask you this one, and then we'll go to break because we do have to pay some bills and have some commercials on. I sell hot sauce on this show, JB's Best. It's delicious. Well, then, what about Waterville Valley? That's a romantic place with a great deal of history. It's the kind of place that you can take your girl, or she can take her guy, or whoever can take their whoever. And it won't kill your knees because it doesn't damage too much cartilage, not even going down upper bobbies. And it's got the history of the Kennedys. It's a romantic setting. What about Waterville then?
I would recommend Waterville to people who are in Massachusetts, like especially the Boston area. I think the two main downsides to Waterville, based off of my opinion and the opinion of, some of the people on my team who have been there, is it's just smaller than the Vermont mountains, and the terrain just isn't as interesting. Like it does have, that cool area at the top that's served by a T-bar. But, you can do the whole place in a day or two, and you kind of get the idea. It's got, I think, the most fun part of Waterville when I was there is they had some nice, like, mogul runs down from the bottom or from the.
Sure. Hang on, I'm going to get this right. Tangent and periphery, and they lead into the Boneyard. That's my favorite run at Waterville.
But anyway, that's just my quick take on it. I do think Waterville is one of the better resorts in New Hampshire, but it's just more of a good regional mountain for people in Boston than a place that I think people in New York City or, like Philly or DC would want to drive up to.
You're listening to Jay Flemma Sports Report. I am Jay Flemma. We've got Sam Weintraub of Peak Rankings, and we will be right back after this. All right, we're back. I am Jay Flemma, and this is Jay Flemma Sports Report on GolfNewsNet and iHeartRadio. We're talking with Sam Weintraub of Peak Rankings, and we're having a good deep dive into Vermont versus New Hampshire. And so let's get right back into it. All right, I am going to throw out my absolute all-time favorite in Vermont. Okay, I know you might not agree, but I know you'll also see why I pick it and probably say, you know what? I see why you like it. Sugar Bush, my beloved in Vermont. And all because of one thing and one thing only, Castle Rock. Why don't you tell all of us what your thoughts are on Mighty Sugarbush.
Man. Okay, so the first thing I'll say is that my personal views are not the same as the objective rankings that I put on the website.
Okay.
Sugarbush is actually also my favorite resort in Vermont.
They're cheering you. The crowd is cheering you.
I think Castle Rock definitely adds to it. I will say, like, if I go to Sugarbush, like Castle Rock is the thing that I look the most forward to. I'm a mogul skier, so I go And if I'm skiing, I want to get some exercise in. Like I'm giving up my ability to go biking in New York when I go skiing. So, believe it or not, on a typical ski day, I usually get less exercise than I do in my typical routine here in New York. So like getting mogul runs that, work a sweat, getting those in on my ski day is something that I actively try to do. Not only do I like doing it, but if I can't get like good mogul runs in, then I feel like my ski day was kind of a waste. So like for example, if I'm going to Sugarbush, the first thing I do is I just look for the runs that have moguls, and I look for the ones that have decent enough conditions that I'm not literally just sliding around on ice.
How's Stein's run then?
Stein's Run, actually, that one was groomed last time I went to Sugarbush,
Oh my
funny
goodness.
enough.
Wow, that's weird. I don't know if I've ever seen Stein's run groomed.
I know it was wild. But Sugarbush, there are a couple of things that I think really make it near and dear to my heart. The first is, I grew up skiing there quite a bit. The second is, well, the thing I'll preface that with is because I grew up skiing there, I skied there before Castle Rock was even something I could do, and I still loved the resort. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that in retrospect. Like now that I analyze resorts for a living, I'm able to put some of the things that I think made me like it into words. Sugarbush is one of those rare East Coast resorts where rather than converging into one peak, it starts out, specifically the Lincoln Peak base, it starts out with one base area and then basically spreads out at the top into three completely separate peaks in very different locations. That is incredibly rare for an East Coast ski resort. That's even not the most common thing at a West Coast ski resort. So when you're at the top, you feel like you're on a bigger mountain than you do when you're at the bottom. And that is something that is really special. I think thing number two is even though Alterra owns it, it still just doesn't feel that commercialized. Like some of the things that I ding it for in its rankings, like, the slow lifts in upper mountain areas, like other things related to a lack of lodging in certain places. Those things actually just, I think, they contribute to just more of this local vibe that you can't really get rid of. And I think thing number three is it just has some really awesome quirks that you wouldn't find at
Yes.
other resorts. So like the Slidebrook Express, that is an insane contraption. The fact that you can ride between mountain areas, and it's a chairlift, it's not a gondola. So you're experiencing the whole thing, you're outside, you're committed to that ride. I'm pretty sure it's still the longest chairlift in the world. Maybe it's been like maybe another chairlift somewhere else has taken it over, but as far as I
And
know,
we're
I don't
talking
think.
about the chair that connects the Lincoln Peak area to the Mount Ellen area. And Mount Ellen was the area, it used to be a completely different area called Sugarbush North.
Yeah, exactly. So, as you said, Jay, Sugarbush and Mount Ellen used to be two physically completely separate resorts, and then in 1995 they put in this, what is it, like a mile, 2 miles, they put in this lift that connected the resorts and is the longest chairlift in North America and probably still the world. But the other thing I think that brings me to is there's just some really, really insane hidden trails at Sugarbush. And at the time of this airing, you may already see that video on the website, but this last time I went to Sugarbush, so this was 3 weeks ago, we did two trails that are not official. They're unmarked trails. And the second of those trails, it's called Church. That might have been within the top five of the most difficult ski trails I've ever done in my life.
Where on the mountain are they located?
Ugh. Okay, I'll tell you in general. I won't give away their exact locations, but Greg's Poop Chute is one of them. And
Okay.
yeah, it is on Castle Rock somewhere.
I kind of figured that one. Okay. And the
Yeah.
other?
And then the second is church, and that is up the long trail. You access it through, you ride to the top of Heaven's Gate, and then you access it. There's like a path on the Paradise Trail that you can use, and you can hike up about 10 minutes, and then you need to know where the entrance is. It is extremely hard to actually find, so I'm definitely not going to try to make that any easier, but
Where does it empty out?
it empties out back onto the Paradise Trail.
And Paradise, if I'm not mistaken, isn't that on what was the Sugarbush North side, now the Mount Ellens?
No, that is actually off Heaven's Gate.
Off the top of what used to be the gondola?
Yes.
Where Jester is that near where Jester is?
Jester is skier's right. This
Okay.
trail is skier's left.
Okay, yes, that now I see why I got confused. Okay, there's also a Paradise at Mad River Glen, and that's their most quintessential trail. Well, now that I've brought it up, okay, let's do a bit of a lightning round of Mad River Glen or Sugarbush.
Sure.
Okay, tell us about Mad River Glen.
Yeah, I mean, Mad River Glen is, it's in the same valley as Sugarbush. So they're in the Mad River Valley. It's kind of quintessential for its charm. It's not very commercial. It's hard to get to. Unlike New Hampshire, as you alluded to, there are some pretty sketchy access roads to get into the area. So you don't really see quite as much traffic as, some of these other resorts. But Mad River Glen is number one. It's smaller than Sugarbush. I think it's just over 100 or so acres, whereas Sugarbush is 580. Number two, Mad River Glen takes everything about Sugarbush's Castle Rock area and just puts it on steroids. Like think of a resort where you were just skiing Castle Rock as the entirety of the mountain. Above the 2200 foot mark, they can't do any snowmaking, so it's all natural snow. They do very little grooming, so you're going to be doing a lot of mogul runs, and the resort knows that they like with Sugarbush, with Castle Rock, where they have a very low capacity double chair in order to preserve the snowpack. Mad River Glen, its highest capacity chairlift is a double, and the chair that serves the top of the mountain is actually a single chair, and it's the only remaining single chairlift in the lower 48 United States. So if you want to get to the top, you're gonna have to ride up by yourself. So the other, I think, interesting thing about Mad River Glen is it is owned by a co-op. So I don't think there are any other co-op owned resorts in Vermont, maybe all of North America. And Mad River Glen does not allow snowboarding. So there's a little bit of controversy there. I think it's a small enough resort that they're able to get away with it and not really have as much controversy as a place like Deer Valley, which is about to be maybe like the third or fourth biggest ski resort in North America. And they don't allow snowboarders. Alta also doesn't allow snowboarders. But Mad River Glen is the third mountain that doesn't allow snowboarders. And apparently, the reason why Mad River Glen originally started having beef with snowboarders was they were having trouble with unloading on their single chair. And then I believe what happened, and I will need to look this up, but I believe what happened was you could still, if you were a snowboarder, ride the other chairs. So the three or two or three other double chairs at Mad River Glen. And then what I've heard is that a group of snowboarders apparently got into a feud with the owner of Mad River Glen. I think her name was Betsy Pratt. And that feud just like kind of incited her and the board to just ban snowboarders. And they haven't even had a vote on whether to lift that ban in 3 decades, I think.
Well, that makes for a fascinating story for certain. I'm a big fan of the place, no matter what, again, because of the gnar. And we've got time for one more. And this one, if if it falls in second place to Sugarbush, it only does it by a micron. But I've fallen in love with it since it got on my Indie Pass. Tell the world your thoughts on J Peak.
Yeah, I mean, J Peak, I think, takes the best parts of Sugarbush and turns them up to 11, as you would say. But it also takes the worst parts of Sugarbush and does the same thing.
Okay.
So J Peak gets the most amount of snow of any Vermont ski resort. It also has some really amazing views. I think the fact that you have a mountain that has like this mini hump in the middle and then tops out at a summit, it makes for this really insane aesthetic where you can kind of look down
Yeah.
at a much more unique view than any other resort out there. I think the other thing is J Peak feels quite local. It's not all that commercialized, and I think it's pretty cool that they have a tram that allows you to ride up, and you still have that local feel. You get those really cool views, and if you're on the tram, you get a really awesome view of everything below. Also, Jay, I think, has some of the most, maybe the most unique expert terrain inbounds at a ski resort in Vermont. Their tram chutes, I think the tram face, I'm
The
not,
face shoots.
yeah, the face chutes. Those are awesome. Those are really cool. And what I really like about those chutes is not only are they unique for the East, they're unique for the entirety of North America. Like, if you took someone from Colorado and you put them on that resort, they'd be like, I've never seen anything like this before.
And they would have no idea where they were. They would have no idea they were in Vermont.
No, it's crazy. And then I think what's really cool is Jay does, like Sugarbush, have some kind of unmarked trails. They're a lot easier to find, but to the skiers right of the face chutes, there are some even gnarlier chutes that I think are really only doable when conditions are really good.
Oh, like the pump house chute.
Yeah, the pump house, exactly. So I think that's really cool. Also, because the natural snow is better, Jay has like the best glades in Vermont by a mile. So if you want to ski glade terrain, it's really great. And it also makes Jay feel a lot bigger than it is, which I think leads me into, I'll do this quickly because I know we don't have too much time, but Jay's downsides are it's not that big. I think it's 385 acres, which is smaller than basically every other ski resort in Vermont that you've heard of if you're just listening to this as a casual Vermont listener. The other thing is the lifts besides the tram could use a lot of work. The two m other main lifts, or I guess there are three other main lifts. So there's the Flyer, which is a high-speed quad. And normally
The
that would be
freezer. Use its
exactly.
right name. Step into the freezer.
Like if a high-speed quad is a miserable chair to ride, then it's not gonna be a fun experience. Like normally people look forward to riding high speed quads, but basically that little hump, like the mini peak and then the big peak, that also
Yeah.
creates a massive wind funnel. So when you get to the top of the freezer, you're going to have wind blowing straight in your face. Like it is literally like if you opened a freezer and the entire motor of that freezer just decided to focus all of its energy rather than freezing the food or whatever
On
on
your
blowing
face.
in your face.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever you do, sit on the far left of that chair going up and ride with your fattest friend, okay? My 6'4" buddy, the ambassador of the mountain named Big Creech, okay, thought it was funny to put me on the right side of that chair. I'm 5'7" and 130 pounds, and I'm trying to block the wind for him. No, next time I did not allow him to do that.
You learned your
Sam, it's been
lesson.
fantastic having you on the show. I absolutely have to have you back one more time this winter. We barely scratched the surface, but yet we went so deep in so many terrific places. I think that my listeners have a smorgasbord in front of them. If you want, you've got 60 seconds to throw out three more of your favorite places for our listeners and readers to hit, and then tell us where they can read your stuff and watch your stuff.
I mean, if I were to choose personally where I would want to go and ski, I'd probably do Kicking Horse, maybe Telluride and Silverton with good ski con with good snow conditions. I'm really into hiking if I can, especially with inbounds hikes. Those are really great ways to meet people. You can check out the website peakrankings.com, YouTube channel, and if you want to come ski with me. Me and my team now run group ski trips. So if you want to check out our Peak House trips, we do trips not only to Vermont, not only out west, but we also do them internationally. And we are going to be running trips to South America, to Japan, maybe even to India. So go to peakrankings.com/peakhouse2025 if you want to check out more about that. We have over 100 people who are skiing with us this winter. So it's already a really popular product, and you'll see the testimonials. You'll see the testimonials on the website. People absolutely love it. It's a really unique way to shake up your ski vacation.
Everybody, Sam Weintraub of Peak Rankings. I'm Jay Flemma. You're listening to Jay Flemma Sports Report and Golf NewsNet on iHeartRadio. Our next guest and segments 3 and 4 will be right after this.